This episode of Mom Essentials is brought to you by Peppermint. Stick around after the episode to find out how this can boost your child's focus and concentration. Motherhood has lots of wonderful moments that fill our hearts and give us a purpose. And it can leave us feeling alone, filled with self-doubt, and the ever-popular mom guilt. Are you tired of trying to pretend like you have it all together? Me too. Welcome to Mom Essentials with me, your host, Angie Weber, for real-life advice, new approaches to parenting, and totally inspiring stories from experts and other moms. A place to come as you are with your messy bun, yoga pants, and all to embrace the best and messiest parts of motherhood. So grab that cup of coffee or your favorite glass of wine while we focus on empowerment over perfection. Hello and welcome to this episode of Mom Essentials. One common concern that many parents have is how to help their children achieve academic success. But they're faced with problems like not being able to get their kids to do their homework, them falling behind, or honestly, just a lack of school in general. That's why I'm so thrilled to have Helen Panos with me today. Helen is an accomplished educator with over 25 years of experience in the public school system and began Dynamis Learning 8 years ago. That is a K-12 nationwide tutoring SAT, ACT prep, advocacy, and academic planning company. With Helen's depth of expertise, she is able to provide personalized support and solutions for academic success. She currently has 15 tutors on staff, and these educators have various specialties. Currently, the company is virtual nationwide with 90% of business being done via Zoom, but tutors can meet a child at their home or library in the Metro Atlanta area as needed. So you can follow Helen on her podcast as well at Smart Parents Successful Students, as she has a wealth of information to share with you parents. So thank you so much for taking time to be with me today, Helen.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Yes, I think that this is a much needed episode. We've talked about academics before, but I'm just so excited for you to be on so we can share some more tips with my listeners, because like I said, a lot of the parents that I coach with too, they struggle with how to help their kids in school. So
sure.
The first place I want to start with is you had over 25 years of experience in the school system, but why did you decide to start Dynamis Learning? What did you see the need was?
That's a good question. probably around my 17th year, I'd say I saw the way the school systems were going to start going. So I've been gifted to look at things in a very proactive manner, so I can see way ahead of what's not going to work. Let's put it that way. So what I was seeing is, at least in Georgia, and really nationwide, they were putting a lot more emphasis on testing. And really, we were starting to teach to the test, so to speak. You've probably heard that kind of phrase from teachers before. We're teaching to the test, which means, yeah, we are teaching to the test. I mean, that's correct in terms of classroom tests. But a Georgia Milestones is taking up, let's say, a good bit of our time. And we're not able to, I mean, you're rushed in a curriculum and you can't get it done. And you know, now there's this test that's going to occur in April, let's say, like a standardized test, and all the states have them. They're mm-hmm. called different things. So we knew that, you know, first of all, we can't spend a lot of time on anything to help a child that's struggling. Let's say you can't go back the next day and go, okay, we're going to go back over these fractions again, or this reading, you know, concept or whatever, or this language arts concept. Because there's not enough time. So we're really, and as you teach longer, you realize how there's even, it seems like, less time because they keep adding more in the curriculum and not as many days to do it in. So I was seeing, we're putting a lot of emphasis on the standardized tests and you know, kind of, I hate to use the word, bringing the level of rigor down, let's say, and the critical thinking involved that kids need and to survive in this society, as we all know, as adults. So all of that was kind of going out the window. It was all about just give them what they need. Plus, they were having us give a study sheet or a study guide that kind of matches up pretty closely to our test because we've already designed the test.
Mm-hmm.
So we're working backwards, you know, backward design, basically. So you do design the test and then all the lessons come from that test, basically. And so I was just seeing that really we were kind of It was really more about how it did it look to parents on the outside, and that was the test scores. They weren't really concerned on, you know, my gifted kids were just blowing that test out of the water, actually. And then the questions, the way they were being phrased were, you know, the critical thinking part of that was kind of being removed, and they were very simple, low level one type questions that anybody could probably answer, basically.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you started out too saying, like, I can kind of see stuff, you know, before it happens. And I'm sure there's a lot of parents listening, like, gosh, I wish I had a magic ball to know what was going to happen with my kids in school, but haven't found it yet. What are some things that parents should look out for? Like I said, you know, I talk to parents a lot, and sometimes they're like, my kid's just not interested, or I can't get them to do their homework. What are some red flags maybe they should be watching out for to know that they need a service like yours? And it's not just a phase.
Yeah, so I definitely want to say a lot of people think of tutoring as just a kid that's struggling, but we actually get a good fair share of the ones that want to advance as well. So keep that in mind. But usually it's, you know, they're just the number one thing I probably hear from parents is they're not completing their homework or their assignments or their projects in a timely manner, or they're skipping certain things out of that project and only doing what they want to do, I guess, in it. Not being very organized is another one. Like they're not maybe allowing enough time to plan out a project and figure out that it's not, you can't wait to the last minute to do it. And there's m multiple steps involved in it. Maybe your child's not adequately challenged in the class. I just had one the other day that I did, and he's in on level classes except for one enhanced math class, but on level in science, on level in language arts, on level in social studies. And when I asked him, I mean, why, I said, you've got 99s and 95s and that kind of stuff. I said, are you bored? And he said, yes. Immediately he said yes. So now we're talking about helping them get in the gifted program, because I understand how to do that because I have the gifted certification and I was a gifted lead. So we're helping him. I'm kind of instructing. This is the advocacy piece that we do. I'm instructing his mom, and she could put me on. I told her to copy me on the emails to instruct. To first of all, they're getting ready to do the recommendations for courses in the fall. So all course recommendations, they're done at the beginning of the second semester, typically for the next school year. So this is the time for her to email those teachers and say, okay, well, what are the guidelines that your county is giving for your particular subject matter? And how can my child, what are those guidelines that can fit him into an advanced class that will qualify him? So, and then there's typically schools don't like to talk about this, but let's say he barely misses that requirement that he needs. And let's say they want him to have a certain grade level or test score on something. And he misses it by 2 points. And then what they don't typically talk about is there's waivers that parents can sign that basically say, you understand your child did not qualify for this course, but you're wanting to waive him in. And you understand that you might need to hire a tutor, or you may need to work extra with this child and do whatever it takes, basically, because I can't tell you to hire a tutor. Do what it takes to basically get your child to pass this class, because if they don't want to be responsible if they start failing it. And so that's one another thing I had her actually ask is, you know, what are the qualifications for the child to get into these advanced classes? Then I said, you need to email the gifted teacher, the leader, separately, and then copy me on all of this. Because once they know an educator is involved, they understand, let's call it the magic ball again. They understand that I know the inside of the school system. Parents do not. Parents do not. You only see what you see, and you don't see a lot of what's going on
You
the
see
inside
everything
working.
behind the curtain as an educator.
And we hear a lot. So, and I can say that because I'm no longer with any school system. So, anyway, so I'm instructing her what to do, and then depending on how they answer her, then I will intervene.
Okay.
It's almost like having an attorney.
I was gonna say, it's not that you're just meeting with the kids to help them, with their academics. Like, you guys really are kind of like a full service where you're there to help advocate for the children and for the parents and will be able to help them more than just, oh, we have an hour slot to help with math. Like, you go above and beyond that. That's amazing. Because a lot of parents need that. Because I know, like, when it comes to the medical field, I always say, like, you need to be your own advocate and you need to, really make sure that you're pushing for what you want and make sure it feels really good. And that can be really challenging in a medical field, but it can also be really challenging when you're talking to teachers about this too, as a parent. So I love that you guys are their additional support to be able to help and like really get them to where they want to be.
Just the other day, one of my tutors met with a high schooler. It's a very top high school here in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's nationwide top school. And he was having issues organizing, understanding when to turn things in, getting out of the class, getting to the other side of the building, just a plan of action. So she sat down and kind of came up with a plan of action based on what he said is going on. And I say, if we don't know how to help, depending on what the issue is, then I'll refer you to other people. And that's why my tagline is what it is, which has got to do with resources and support. Normally we can do it, but if I think they need an executive functioning coach, that might be who I refer you to. I've got a couple that have been on my podcast as well that I can refer you to. But even if, your child has scores that are lower than their ability on classroom graded work or standardized tests, it may be I've gotten calls just to work on standardized tests because they don't do well on that. Maybe they have anxiety on the bigger tests. So any of that would, like kind of render itself to tutoring or help, benefiting, like I said, enrichment and acceleration, because a lot of these kids can go down a totally different path than what we were of what was available to us when we were in school. They have a lot of different. We do academic planning as well, and course selection is what we're calling it, because if we say you should do that from sixth grade. Because if you haven't looked at that and where your child is, then that sets the path really all into high school. It's too late to do it once again into ninth and 10th grade. And a lot of your counselors are only more concerned with, do you have enough credits to graduate? Usually that's what they ask about. They don't ask about anything else, really. Goal setting, we do a goal setting type thing too. We'll set goals with the kids, plan any goals, and I have a goal planner actually. It's not my free gift for today, but they can get that from me. So all of this stuff. I mean, I was trying to get a child, a second grader, into the gifted program and realized it seemed like he was having a reading issue actually. And I put him with my reading specialist out of Alabama, and they've been doing it virtually, and he's really improved.
That's
So
awesome. That was actually going to be one of my next questions is obviously you've mentioned like you have been helping high schoolers, you help, sixth graders, and you even just said like a second grader. When should a parent be looking, whether it's because their child is struggling or because they know that they are more gifted and they want to, really go down that course of getting their child in the gifted program? Like, when should parents really be considering reaching out to someone like you to get additional help?
I would say by second grade because things change. Kids are very young in kindergarten first, and anything can change. It's hard to say do they have a disability yet or not. They typically, even if you had to go get a psychological, they typically say to wait till they're about 7 or 8 to do that. 8 years old, because again, they're changing, their hormones and things like that are changing because they're too young. And then from there, even in the gifted program, the earlier you can get a kid into the gifted program, the better. It's in a way, it's easier. So I would say anywhere from second to fifth grade is a perfect time to do that. And we do SAT, ACT prep for teens as well. And I've had to go to bat for those kids when they've had to add let's say, diagnosis into a 504 plan. Because I was a 504 chair, so I understand how to do that too. So I have gone to bat for kids to get them a 504 plan to get extended time, or if they needed frequent breaks, like this young lady had anxiety, and she would have to possibly have to stop and go to the restroom more frequently than your typical kid. And when you're sitting in an SAT, ACT, SSAT, anything that takes 3 hours like that, you can't just get up and go. to the bathroom unless you have accommodations for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called a Section 504 plan. And we could talk about that in a whole other section.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got IEPs, right? And I have a really good person that can help. Actually, I called in on her. Somebody I knew was a grandmother reached out to me. She was an educator. She goes, "They're not going to listen to me. I need you to step in." I hear that a lot too.
Yeah.
"I need you to step in and deal with this IEP thing." And I said, "I'll tell you what, he's 4 years old. I didn't even know a kid could have an IEP that young."
I didn't either.
And he had a lot of things going on. And so Heather, I got the referral on that one. And she's actually very good. She does a lot of IST stuff and in the past. So she understands the whole special ed. She's special ed certified. We're actually going to do a webinar together in February.
Awesome.
So,
Very
yeah.
cool. Yeah, you have a wealth of knowledge, lots of tools in your own toolbox to help parents with these types of situations. Again, no matter if they're really struggling or if they are gifted and wanting to excel in that area as well. Now, you may have already kind of touched on some of this, but can you share your four-pronged approach to advocacy with our listeners?
Yes. First, what I like to do is get as much data as I can on the child. And that way, that kind of helps me determine which way to go, right? So, yes, test scores are important. I just kind of insulted the fact that they actually spend way too much time on test scores, but they are using them. So, that's important that your children do well on these standardized tests, like the Georgia Milestones or Iowa's or MAP tests, all these tests that they're giving them, SAT, ACT, because unfortunately, that's our society. It is evaluating kids on where they can go based on these test scores. And if you're trying to get into a private school, same thing. So I definitely like to look at test scores. I even said that to this sixth grade mom that I was working with him and trying to get him in the advanced classes for this next year. So that tells me how they test. You know, can they score 90th percentile on the total reading, total math? I'm also looking at that for the gifted program to see if they. I think I could like help them with that because I tutor on that. Providing support with current coursework through tutoring. So that's the second prong approach. Third is assisting in obtaining accommodations, like I've mentioned this for remediation or enrichment, because you shouldn't think a Section 504 plan is only for kids that need remediation or help. It's kids that are a lot of them in the gifted program, actually. And they just can't get it done. They need extra time. They may have ADHD. That's very popular as a diagnosis to this day. And then a fourth part of that is developing a plan for the future that meets the student and family needs and goals while teaching students how to self-advocate for themselves.
I love
So
that.
a lot of our seniors are telling us, "Oh, thank you so much," to one of my tutors, Erica, who, you know, is kind of telling them to do that more. Whereas they're not really stepping up themselves to go do that. And she kind of works together with the teacher. We like to get on and get permission to be with the teacher. And then we kind of know more what's going on. Otherwise, really, we're all in the dark because the kids are there, what, 8 hours a day. We don't really know what's going on at the school building, right? And now I think that's all changed. Like nowadays, parents definitely need to know what's going on over there. Like, how's my child acting in the classroom? Is he raising his hand? Is he sitting in the front of the room? Is he in the back talking to, you know, they have 30 and 32 kids or whatever the
So
limit
many.
is. We cannot expect that a teacher is going to just email you and go, "Hey, I've noticed he's not writing very much." I have a third grader. He's very intelligent, high level intelligence, 2 years above in reading, math, everything. He's really like on the sixth grade level. I personally deal with him because he has a lot of other issues going on, but he will not, out of any circumstances, it's not that he doesn't know how to write. He does know how to write. He will not come up with these ideas himself. Like he gets totally stuck getting started. He does have ADHD. And now I'm trying to work with him on the computer. The other day I showed him how to use the computer to his advantage. I go, "You're always on the computer. You're going to be a STEM kid." And it was so funny when I showed him, I said, If the prompt is, it's an argumentative essay or persuasive essay, and it says, you know, the city is going to ban social media for kids under the age of 18. I said, "Are you for that or against it?" And he says, "Oh, I'm against it." And so, okay, give me three reasons why. And he can only give me one. And he was totally stuck. And I could see how that probably goes on in the classroom. And the teachers, A, they may know him by now, but at first they probably haven't picked up on the fact that this kid is just stalling. He's probably over here drawing. Maybe he's doing something else, looking around the room, but time is ticking away and he's not getting it done. And so I have had to like show him how to go and, okay, if you're really stuck on your ideas, and that could be the ADHD, then I need you to go over here and Google what are the benefits to having social media for kids. And so then he starts to get a little silly with it a bit, but I said no. And then he tries to copy and paste exactly what they say. And I said, oh, no. Let's talk about plagiarism now. I said, and I don't want you doing that.
Yeah, good
So
lesson
he,
to
but he's
learn.
very, I'm telling you, very high level intelligence. But he almost could not get in the gifted program. And that's when I got the call, is because the COGAT is very difficult. It's a mental abilities test. And he only could score like an 86 percentile on that test as one of the highest components. And then his mom called me, and I worked with him for several weeks into the summer, paused him being tested again until I felt he was ready. And then I knew he was going to make it under the nonverbal part of that test. So kids that are very intelligent, even though he's good in math and stuff, he may not do well on a something like a COGAT, a cognitive abilities test. But on the nonverbal, which is more picture oriented and it's really critical thinking, he did very well on it.
I think that's just a great reminder in general to parents too. Like sometimes we can see something like, oh, he's drawing in class or he's not doing well on this test, but really there's more to the story than that. So we need to dig to figure out kind of what's the root of the problem here, not just, write him off like, oh, he's just lazy or he doesn't know how to do it or he doesn't want to do it kind of thing. So I think that's just that can really touch on a lot of things for parenting. But one thing that you advocate so much for the students that you work with, and I love how you are helping them advocate for themselves as well, because I already kind of mentioned like I tell people to do that in the medical world, and in school and just for their children in general. But when your child can step up and advocate for themselves, it just brings a whole new level to it. And when my husband and I went into our daughter's conference last year, actually, that was like the biggest compliment her teacher gave us to in my eyes. And she said, you know what? Your daughter, she comes in and she knows how to advocate for herself. She will tell you if she needs more time, if she needs help, if she wants to go talk to the counselor because something's bothering her. And I'm just like, okay, conference done. Like, that's all I needed to know. Like, I love it. And they're doing,
Makes
well
your
and
life
stuff.
easier.
Yeah, exactly. So, but one other piece that I really want to make sure we cover before our time is up is that, and I think this is probably based on additional conversations that you and I have had outside of this podcast interview right now, but you guys do a lot of work with the students and the parents still need to do some work as well. So, can you kind of touch on the point of like, even after you guys are done with your sessions, like, what can parents do at home to still nurture their children in these areas? And why is that so important?
That's a loaded question. Yes.
That is a loaded one.
So some of the big key things I say why the system is not working is teachers do not have time to develop skills. I think that is the number one thing, even as entrepreneurs, right, that we have to do to form and build a business, right? So this is important, I think, is the skills, not necessarily the content. I could talk about the content for a minute too in a second, but I'm gonna start with skills. Organization, forming habits. Like, what do you do when you first get up in the morning? Have a some type of schedule for your children. And the more that they have any other disability, like ADHD or something like that, that becomes very important. Certain sports are tailored toward kids who have ADHD, like swimming and things like that. So you can even Google that and have them active. Doing things, playing outside, that helps with the brain power. I've talked about fostering creativity in kids and how that actually enhances critical thinking as well. And there are a lot of games you can Google that. I think I have a blog actually on that. If they go into my website at dynamislearningacademy.com, you'll have to look through all my blogs. I have one about fostering creativity in kids. I think I mentioned some of those games in there. Also, Rob Wilson writes for Psychology Today, and he's done a blog for me on that too, in critical thinking and creativity. And you can probably find him under Psychology Today. So creativity, critical thinking, I'd say time management, habits, organization, a lot of the things today are on technology, but that doesn't work for every kid. So unless they're going to go over here into this calendar and look things up, I personally only use technology to set up meetings. Everything else is done in a planner that I handwrite, and there's something to be said about them writing things down from the hand, from the head to the hand to the paper. There's research about that, how powerful that is actually. So I personally think they should write the stuff, their homework down, and make sure that they've checked it off the night before when they're packing everything in their book bags to get ready to go to school the next morning. It's set, everything's right there, ready to go. And they don't have to be looking everywhere for it. Research skills are very important, especially in our society today. We can see, based on, not to get into any politics, I'll just keep it very general. We can see what was going on back in 2020 when people were throwing things out there, and they might be an opinion. And I'm thinking, wow, we really lack in research skills and understanding fact from opinion in this world, because people are just saying anything they see on social media. And so I think it's important to parents today, because these kids are growing up with technology so much, that they understand how to evaluate websites and look at them and understand what may be good and what may not be very appropriate from a source. Because gosh, there's so much stuff out there. I'm thinking about like their age group, right? They're looking at this whole thing with Taylor Swift, let's say, and Travis Kelce. Let's just use them because that's like their age group, right? And there is so much stuff out there, you almost can't get your head around what's real and what's not real. So I think I used to do this course with my media specialist, evaluating websites and how do you determine that they're, legitimate websites or not. And I think that becomes very important for kids today because they're on technology all the time. And then read, 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 folks. I'm going to come back to subject matter for a minute, because what we're seeing for SAT and ACT, woo, the reading is going downhill. You can have, because everybody's pushing kids toward the STEM careers, right? So they're very strong in the science and technology and maths. And then they're not thinking they need to read. But the best kid getting the best score is the ones that do truly still love to read to this day. And they need to do something with that reading. Not just read, and they've appeased you that they've read. They actually need to put some things into action. So they may need to define the word, so highlight through or underline or whatever they're going to do, words they don't know while they're reading. Then they need to sit down and maybe for that whole chapter or a couple chapters at a time, they can batch process it. Do two chapters at a time. Write down all these words or type them on a computer, all these words you didn't know. Now define them. I have this young girl who's very smart, actually drawing a picture as well, to go with that word, because some people may not remember the definition, but they'll remember the picture. And that might give them a better heads up on what that word means. So, and really, then we make her find it in the text, and then we actually have her write a sentence. Now, that might be a little overkill, depending on the age of your child, but that's how they're going to get a good vocabulary base and be able to pass that part of the SAT and ACT, because they're not doing very well on those sections anymore.
I love that idea.
And I'm going to say this, a couple of my fathers are really great about this, so this is a good way to incorporate this. Without them, kind of groaning and telling you, I'm not doing that, Mom, is on Sundays, I think would be the best day typically, because most families are in early. I notice Atlanta's really quiet by 6 o'clock. So maybe after dinner or before they go to sleep, or maybe at 5 o'clock, you pick a time that all of you guys are always pretty much going to be at home, and it might be Sunday at 5. And, what they do, the fathers sit down and they talk to it's usually the girls. They have a bunch of girls, right? But not necessarily just girls. I've seen it with boys too. And then they sit down and they talk to them about, what do you need coming up this week? What do you have coming up? Test, whatever. What do you need? Do you need Helen? Do you need one of her tutors? Are you going to need tutoring this week? Okay, what about bullying? What about girls? What about guys? What about friends? I mean, just talking about everything. And then you could go into what I call like a reading time for an hour, just 1 hour. Everybody's reading, including the adults. So you're role modeling this. You could be reading something related to your work, an article you've been wanting to read, or a book. I have a book I've been trying to get back to myself. And then just for 10 minutes, sit down after everybody's read in that hour. And then everybody needs to say something about what they learned in this book. So that way, you know, they really have read it. They know you've read it. There's accountability there. So I think a big part of what we do in an advocacy and why parents can't make it happen at work is advocating and accountability. Because I know parents are very busy, so the part that probably falls apart is the accountability part.
Well, I love that idea, and I love the like hour of reading all together, because I think that's one thing that I share about a lot is just like us as parents, sometimes we can be really hypocritical. So we can tell our kids, like, get off your screen, stop being on your tablets, like, you've been on them all day. And then what happens? Our kids look at us and they see us on our screen. And my son totally called me out on this the other night. I said, we're gonna watch a family movie or do something. And I said, but we're not bringing any other screens into the area or whatnot. And I think it was like a Sunday night. And I had my phone. I don't know why. I looked at it because it's just out of habit. And he goes, "Mom, I thought we weren't supposed to be on screens." And I think in that case, a lot of parents would have said, "Well, I'm the adult. Don't worry about what I'm doing." But I instantly put it down. I said, "You know what? You are exactly right. I did say we weren't going to have any other screens in here right now." And so just like, again, really modeling that behavior. And my daughter reads all of the time. Like, I honestly don't like going and buying her books because she finishes them so fast. I'm like, we need to go to the library more. Like, as much as you love books, like, you read through them so fast. But like, I would love to get into that more too versus being on a screen. So it's just that practice of getting everyone in the family on board. And I love the weekly meetings as far as like what's coming up. Let's all be on the same page so we can all cheer each other on and support each other too. So this was so great, Helen. I know that you gave my listeners a lot of ideas and tips, and of course they can reach out to you if they need some services for their kids as well, because like I said, you have 15 tutors all in different specialties. You've already given us a ton of examples of all the different ways that they can help and support the children and the parents in this journey through academics. And I know I want to make sure that you share a little bit more about the free gift that you kind of alluded to in the beginning, which is your advocacy brochure.
And now a lot of what I just said is on here, the four-prong approach. How do we advocate for your child? Parents advocacy checklist. That's kind of some of the things I was reading off of when you asked the first question. So this is actually an advocacy brochure, the missing piece in K through 12 education, I say. So you can definitely download that, and there'll be a link there for you to do so.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Helen. And yes, listeners, head to the show notes. You're going to be able to get connected with her on her social media, go to her website, get that brochure downloaded, because even though you went over all of it, we always need great reminders too. And sometimes we need to look at things many times before it really gets set in our head. So, and just like practicing with putting our phones down and, picking up a book and stuff instead, it's sometimes is a habit that we need to start developing. So, thank you for your time, Helen. Listeners, I hope you got a lot from this conversation, especially when it comes to being an advocate for your child in the academic world. And of course, stick around for the Essential Minute coming up next, and we will see you next time on Mom Essentials. Hey, thanks for sticking around for the Essential Minute. We talked a lot about how to help our students succeed, and I wanted to offer another tool for your toolbox. Peppermint oil. It is renowned for its invigorating and focused enhanced properties, making it an excellent choice for supporting academic performance and concentration. The refreshing scent of peppermint can help clear the mind and increase alertness, which is especially beneficial for students during studying sessions and homework time. In our discussion, Helen emphasized the importance of creating an optimal learning environment for children, and using this oil can be a simple yet very effective way to enhance focus and mental clarity. And parents, this can also help when we have big tasks at hand as well, even if it's not homework. When diffused or applied topically, peppermint can help students stay alert and motivated. motivated, making it easier to tackle challenging subjects and retain information. Now, you can diffuse this by adding a few drops of peppermint oil to your diffuser in your child's study area to create a stimulating atmosphere that promotes concentration and clarity. Now, you can also dilute a drop or two of peppermint with a carrier oil and apply it to the back of your neck or temples. This can help reduce feelings of mental fatigue and improve focus. And simply by inhaling the scent of peppermint oil from the bottle or a cotton ball can provide an instant boost of alertness and energy. You can incorporate peppermint oils into your child's study routine to provide mental stimulation and enhance their academic performance and help them achieve their educational goals. Now, if you want to add this to your parenting toolbox or learn more about it, head to the show notes or go to my website, theparenttoolbox.info/podcast, and click on today's episode. Happy oiling! Thank you for listening to today's episode of Mom Essentials. I would love to hear from you. Please leave a review or contact me through my website, theparenttoolbox.info, or follow me on Instagram at theparenttoolbox.